This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
The sudra this week in Parshas Noso, the Birkas Kohanim, the special bracha which the Kohanim give us. Here in Chutz Laaretz only on Yom Tov, but in Eretz Yisrael they do it every day. And the bracha is Yivarechecho Hashem v'yishmerecho. May Hashem bless you and guard you. May He give you lots, in other words, and make sure that you're able to keep it. Yo'er Hashem pono ve'lecho v'chuneko. May God make His face to shine upon you and be gracious to you. Yisol Hashem pono ve'lecho. May Hashem lift up His face unto you. V'yosem lecho shalom. And this is the most important part of the whole bracha we learn. And may He give you peace. Asks the Gemara in Megillah, Taf Yud Chet Amud Aleph 18a, Moro loy ma'atzim shalom acha birkas kohanim. If after all birkas kohanim is v'yasem lecha shalom, may God grant you peace, why in the Shmona Esra, immediately after the birkas kohanim, do we say the bracha of sim shalom, O God give us peace, etc.? Answers the Gemara, Dichtiv v'ani avarchem, because it says here in our Sedra that after the Kohanim have blessed the people, the Ani Avarchem, I will bless them. Brocho da Kodesh Baruch Hu Shalom. And the blessing of the Ribbono Shel Olam is Shalom. It is peace. That's the blessing that the Ribbono Shel Olam gives us. Shalom is more than just a brocha, as far as the Ribbono Shel Olam is concerned. In fact, it's more even than a midot. It's more even than one of the Ribbono Shel Olam's attributes. Shalom is in fact inherently part of the Ribbono Shel Olam. We're told in Shabbos Daf Yud Beis that the word Shalom is one of the Ribbono Shel Olam's names, and that's why one isn't permitted to say the word Shalom in an unclean place. So in Eretz Yisrael, for example, you've got problems if you walk into a sauna and you see your friend there. You can't say Shalom. That's the din. You've got to use some other language, or you've got to say something else, but you can't use the word Shalom, because the word Shalom is one of the Ribbono Shel Olam's names. It describes the essence of the Ribbono Shel Olam, and it's something which is very close to Him. The problem with Shalom, with peace, and that's obviously something towards which we have to strive very definitely, the problem with Shalom is that it's inevitably and perpetually in conflict with another middah to which we have to strive as well, and that is the middah of emes, of truthfulness. To be true and honest and keep the peace is virtually impossible. And this impossibility was already realized by the Ribbono Shel Olam before He even created man. Because the Medrash says in Bereishis Rabbah chapter 8, Amar Rabbi Simon said, B'sho'o shebo HaKadosh Baruch Hu livro es Adam HaRishon. At the time that the Ribbono Shel Olam was about to create Adam HaRishon, Nasu Malachei HaShores Kisim Kisim VeChaburos Chaburos. The Malachim, the angels, were formed into classes and groups. Mehem Omrim Al Yivro, Mehem Omrim Yivro. A great debate took place in Shemayim whether Adam HaRishon should be created altogether. Some groups of the angels said no, Al Yivro, he should not be created, and some said he should be created. What did it revolve around? Chesed, those angels that supported the midah of chesed, of kindness, Omer Yivro, you must create a man. Shehu Gomel Chasodim, he's going to be a person capable of doing chesed. The world's going to be richer with human beings. The emes, Omer Al Yivro. And the midah of emes is no ways. What do we need a man for? Shekula Shkorim, he's a dishonest being. Tzedek, Omer Yivro. Tzedek, charity, goodness, says he should be created. She always said tzedakah, because man will do tzedakah. He'll do kindness, he'll do charity, the world will be richer with him. Shalom, Omer Al Yivro, the Kuli Ketata. Shalom said he must not be created because he's full of arguments. And by creating man, the world's going to be worse off. In other words, the Ribbono Shel Olam foresaw that as far as chesed and tzedek is concerned, the world would be better off with the creation of man. As far as emes and shalom is concerned, the world will be worse off with the creation of man. And Reb Moshe Soloveitchik, that was a brother of Reb Velvel Zatzal, explained this medrash by saying that Emes and Sholem realized that man could not exist being loyal to both of them. Emes and Sholem. Emes and Sholem realized that they both had to exist. You can't have Emes without Sholem, you can't have Sholem without Emes. And man, by his nature, would be incapable of living both in accordance with Emes and in accordance with Sholem. Therefore, Emes and Sholem both said, you better rather not make man. You're going to put him into an impossible position. Whatever he'll do will either be an infringement against Sholem, against peace, or it will be an infringement against Emes. But he won't be able to be an honest man and a man who encourages and keeps the peace. That's the Medrash. And this is something that one understands. You have people who call the spade a spade. You have people who are able to be very forthright and be very honest. But they rub people up the wrong way. They're not diplomatic. And you have people who are diplomatic, but unfortunately the word diplomatic is just a nice word for being sly and untrustworthy. To be diplomatic means that you say things that you don't mean. It means that you tell one person one thing and you tell somebody else something else. You design your words to suit the listener. Diplomatic is not a very nice word in terms of Emes. In terms of Sholem, it's very nice. A diplomat is a person who knows how to do difficult things without rubbing people up the wrong way. But in terms of Emes, it's sneaky. It's sly. You'll very seldom find a diplomat or a diplomatic person who's a Baal Emes who you'll hear the truth from. You'll always hear from him what he thinks you like to hear. You'll never hear anything offensive from him. That's not Emes Kait either. One wants to keep the peace, but there's a mitzvah of a cheach to cheach. Sometimes you've got to take an individual and you've got to tell him that that's not the way to be. That doesn't make him like you. That doesn't encourage peaceful relations between people. Sometimes it has to be done. How does one bridge this gap? What was the conclusion of the Ribbono Shel Olam? When we learn the Medrash, that the Ribbono Shel Olam understood that there was going to be a conflict. Emes and Sholem can't live together. There's going to be conflict. What is the Ribbono Shel Olam's recommended solution to this conflict in which we all find ourselves every day? And if we don't find ourselves in it every day, then we're just not living. But if we're involved with human beings, if we're involved with people, we must constantly find ourselves walking a tightrope between being diplomatic and sensitive on the one hand and being honest and straightforward on the other hand. And that's what we're going to discuss tonight. The middah of Emes and the middah of Sholem and how one can reconcile them. What is the din if there is a conflict between Emes and Sholem? What is the din? You have to say something, but saying it is going to cause a violation of the peace. But it's Emes, it's true. What is the din? The Gemara in Yevamah says, this is Yevamah Samachay Amud Beis 65b, Omer Rabbi Ilo Mishum Rabbi Elozo Rabbi Shimon, said Rabbi Ilo in the name of Rabbi Elozo, the son of Rabbi Shimon, Mutar Loi Le'odom L'Shanois Bidvar HaSholem. A man is permitted to tell a lie in the interests of peace. Shenemar, as it says, Avichos, we're talking obviously where the lie doesn't do anybody any harm. You can't be dishonest in terms of causing somebody damage for the sake of peace. We're talking about a harmless lie, about telling a lie which is not causing anybody any harm, but it's not true. Let's say somebody comes to you and says, do you know whether so-and-so likes me? You're allowed to say yes, even though you know that he hates his guts. That's what the Gemara says. And we'll see a little bit further on that not only are you allowed to, but you have to. Shenemar, as it says, Avicho tziva kotem rili Yosef anasona, etc. The brothers of Yosef told him, you know, before we left, before your father died, he commanded that we should tell you that you must forgive us. And he never did. But they were entitled to do that because of peace, to try and re-establish peaceful relationships between one another. Rabbi Nosson Omer Mitzvah. Rabbi Nosson says not only is it mutter, but it's a mitzvah, one has to. Shnema vayomer Shmuel Echelech v'shoma Shul v'hargeni. God gives Shmuel an impossible task. He tells him to go and anoint David HaMelech before Shaul even knows that David HaMelech is the next king. So Shaul is still ruling. And he sends Shmuel to go and anoint David. And you know what the relationships between Shaul and David were at that time. So Shmuel says, how can I? I'll go in there and I'll be killed. And the Mephoshim point out that he wasn't worried about being killed. He'd done unpopular things before. He'd put his foot in it before. He'd told Shaul the truth many times before. That wasn't what he was worried about. What he was worried about was the peace between him and David, between Shaul and David. And the Ribbono Shel Olam said to him, don't worry, take some animals and tell Shaul that you're just coming to that part of the world to give a sacrifice. So the Ribbono Shel Olam instructs Shmuel to tell a lie so as to preserve the peace between David and Shaul. Therefore, says Rabbi Nosson, it's a mitzvah. The Ribbono Shel Olam wouldn't do it if it was just reshus. Since the Ribbono Shel Olam does it, we see that it's in fact a mitzvah to tell a lie in the interest of peace. The Bei Rabbi Yishmael Tana, the house of Rabbi Yishmael learned, Godol HaShalom. Peace is so important. She'af HaKadosh Baruch Hu Shina Boy, because even the Ribbono Shel Olam told a lie in the interest of peace. Not only did he instruct somebody to tell a lie, but he himself did. When God tells Sarah that she's going to have a child, she laughs and she says, don't be silly, my husband's an old man already. And when God tells Abraham that that's what Sarah said, he doesn't say that. He doesn't say she said that you're an old man. She said she's an old lady. So the Ribbono Shel Olam tells a lie, something which is not true, in order to encourage peace between people. That's the Gemara in Yevamos, from which we see that it is a mitzvah to tell a lie in the interest of peace. So already we see we're worlds apart from the generally accepted view that honesty at all costs, call a spade a spade. That's not so. Not if it antagonizes Shulam. And in fact, the continuation of that medrash which I learned with you is very interesting, because what happens afterwards? So what did the Ribbono Shel Olam do? Now he's in trouble. Not al emes v'hishlicha la'aretz. He threw emes out. Okay, if that's what it is, that emes and Shalom, and here we see that Reb Moshe Soloveitchik's explanation of the Medrash is right, that the main conflict was between emes and Shalom. So look, if emes and Shalom, if man can't be loyal to both emes and Shalom, I would rather there was no emes. I would rather there was no truth. But Shalom there has to be, peace there has to be. Amru Malachi Asharis Lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the angel said to the Ribbono Shel Olam, Ribbono Olam, Ma Atah Mevazeh Tachzim Al Tichasya Shelcha. How can you throw out your seal, your stamp? Ta'aleh Emes Min Haaretz. Let Emes come up again from the land. So we see two things here. Firstly, we see that Emes lost the fight, that the Ribbono Shel Olam opts for Shalom over and above Emes when they come into conflict. And this in fact is borne out by the Gemara in Yevamos. Secondly, we see that Emes is the seal of the Ribbono Shel Olam. It's the stamp of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Shalom is his name, but Emes is his seal. Right? Like Lahavdil Elef Havdolos, Jimmy Carter is his name. The presidency is his seal. That's what he is. Anything he says is being said by the president. But what he really is Jimmy Carter. The Ribbono Shel Olam, Lahavdil Elef Havdolos, what is he? He's Shalom. But his seal, anything which comes out from him, is Emes. It's all stamped with Emes. And that's why, obviously, the seal, the office, is secondary to the man himself. The man can't be higher than the office. The office can't be higher than the man. Shalom, if that's the ultimate, Emes has to serve Shalom. Then we see that Shalom, that Emes is thrown out, and it's brought back in again. So Emes is the one we've got to watch. Shalom is constant. Shalom stays where it is. No matter what, there always has to be peace, there always has to be Shalom. Emes is the one that's up and down. It's thrown out, it's brought back again. Emes, truth, is the one that we've got to play with. Emes is the thing we've got to use our intuition and use our own judgment with to decide when and how to utilize it. And that's what we've got to now examine. What are the parameters within which one may adjust Emes? Is there anything else apart from Shalom for which we're permitted to adjust Emes? That's the next question. And for that we bring a Gemara in for the Metzia, Daf Kaf Gimel Amud Beis 23b, where the Gemara says, they're discussing the din of returning lost property, the Gemara is discussing. And normally the din is that if the lost property you found has some distinguishable sign on it, you have to advertise that you've lost the property, and anybody who wants to claim it should come, and they have to give you the sign. If they give you the right sign, they take the property. if it does not have a particular sign on it, under normal circumstances you can keep it because the owner has given up hope of ever retrieving it because he knows he can't identify it. Unless there are Talmidei Chachomim around. Because if there are Talmidei Chachomim around, then if the Talmid Chachom says, let me please see it, if I see it I'll be able to recognize it, then you've got to show it to him, and if he says, yes, that's mine, you've got to give it to him. That's the din. That's, of course, provided it's a used item. If it's a brand new item, then there's no way he can know that it's his. But provided it's used, and there might be something which when he looks at it, it looks familiar, if he's a Talmid Chochem, he doesn't have to give any signs. If he says it belongs to him, you give it to him. Comes the question, what's the definition of a Talmid Chochem? How do you now know what is a Talmid Chochem? It now becomes halachically important to know whether it is a Talmid Chochem or not. You find a watch, and it has no obvious signs to it. Could be a regular watch, a popular make, and a man comes and he says, I can't give you a sign, but I'm a Talmid Chochem, I would never tell a lie. Can I have a look at it? I'll tell you right away whether it's mine or not. What is the din? Who does one respond to? And the Gemara says that the thing to watch for is if he's an honest man. We'll define this a little bit more carefully still. But there's a condition. There are three areas in which Talmidei Chachomim normally do with justification tell a lie. The one is b'masechet, regarding their learning. We'll look at Rashi on all of them. The other is b'puria, regarding their intimate lives. And the third is b'ushpiza, regarding their hosts. Says Rashi, b'masechet, yesh b'yodcho masechet ploini sedura b'girsa. Oilav. If somebody says to a Talmid Chochem, do you know Gemara Ksubas well? Even if he does, he should say no. I don't know it very well. Umidas anova here, and that's a midah of anova. That's modesty. Tosfos points out that's not if they ask you a question. If they've come to ask you a question, you've got to be able to give them the answer straight away. But if they're just inquisitive and they're asking a question which really has no practical relevance, whatever, then you say no. Befuria, if they ask you an intimate question, you can say no, you can tell a lie. Midas tsiniyusu, because that's modesty. Somebody asks you an intimate question, you're in a fix. Because if you say yes, that's giving the secret away. If you say mind your own business, that's also giving the secret away. If you keep quiet and you don't answer, that's also giving the secret away. So you're going out with a young lady and somebody comes and says, are you engaged? So if you say yes, you don't want to say yes yet because nobody knows. You haven't told your own parents yet that you're engaged. If you keep quiet, they know. You're saying that you are. If you say none of your business, that also means that you are. So what can you do but tell a lie? So you're permitted to tell a lie, you're permitted to say no. But ushpiza, about one's host, sha'aluhu al ushpizo in kiblu b'seve ponim yofus. They asked him about his host, whether he was well treated. The Omar love, and he said no. I wasn't very comfortable there. Midah tovah here, that's a very good midah, that's derech eretz. Kidei shelo yikpitzu boi b'nei odom she'enan mehugonin lo ve'tomido lo ve'yechalo es mamayna. Otherwise he'll get a name as being a hospitable person, and everybody will be at his, all sorts of unrefined people will be at his door, eating his food and using up his money. So that's not a nice thing to do. If you've been treated well by somebody, you're permitted in fact to put others off going there. It's not your business to be a shadchan between a potential host and guests. Those are the three areas in which, if you find that the man concerned has told a lie, that doesn't mean he's not a Talmid Chochem, because the Talmidei Chachomim do tell lies in these three areas. Asks Tosfos the obvious question, what about the fourth one from the Gemara in Yevamos, that for peace you're allowed to tell a lie? Why isn't that mentioned? That's the first question with which we have to deal. Answers Tosfos, Mishum dahani nami mishum darke sholom hain. Now Tosfos down the line has explained these three cases of being able to tell a lie virtually the same as Rashi. In fact, in most cases he's quoted Rashi. And he now says, Mishum dahani nami mishum darke sholom hain. These are also for darke sholom. These are also for peaceful reasons. Uregilin yoser me'acherim lachi nokatani. But they're the more frequent examples of doing something for peace, and that's why these three examples were given. But this is a subcategory of of Sholem. The Rif also asks the question, and the Rif gives a different answer. The Rif says, because these are Rishus, these you're permitted to tell a lie. In Yevamos, you've got to tell a lie. And here we're just talking about where you're permitted to tell a lie, not where you've got to tell a lie. For Sholem, when you're talking about peace, about preserving peace or encouraging peace between people, you have to tell a lie for the interests of peace. In these cases where you want to be an onav, or you want to whatever it is, you're permitted to tell a lie. You don't have to. The Drisha in Choshen Mishpat Simon Reish Samach Beis 262 classifies these explanations in two sections, and he says on the one hand we have Rashi and Tosfos, and on the other hand we have the Rambam and the Rif. All this sounds a little bit complicated, but remember what I've told you before, that there's no Torah which is beyond the understanding of any normal Jew. So either you're not a normal Jew, or you're not listening, or I haven't explained it well. If I haven't explained it well, you must shout. If there's something you don't understand because I haven't explained it, you must shout, because it is a little bit complex. But if I've explained it well, and you're listening, and you're normal, you'll understand. Says the Drisha, on the one hand we have Rashi and Tosfos. Rashi and Tosfos hold that the principle, the reason that you're allowed to tell a lie here, is because of Midas. Rashi says so. You're allowed to tell a lie about your learning because that's anova, that's modesty. You're allowed to tell a lie about your intimate life because that's tznius. You're allowed to tell a lie about your host because that's derech eretz. In other words, the correctness, the reason for which we're allowed to tell a lie, is because it's in the interests of midas, it's refinement. It's the refined thing to do, to tell a lie under such circumstances, because you've been put into a position where telling the truth would be coarse. Telling the truth would be ugly, telling the truth would be unrefined. And therefore, says the Drisha, according to Rashi and Tosfos, in these cases you've got to tell a lie. And that is why Tosfos could not answer his question the same way as the Rif does. What did Tosfos ask? Why don't we include the case of Sholem? And the Rif answered, because the case of Sholem you've got to tell a lie, whereas here you may tell a lie. According to Rashi and Tosfos, says the Drisha, here also you've got to tell a lie, and therefore Tosfos had to find some other difference between Sholem and these cases over here. And he says the difference is that Sholem is the major category, and these are three day-to-day examples that fit into that. On the other hand, the Rambam and the Rif hold that you may tell a lie here, not that you have to. And the interesting difference between the Rambam and Rashi is that the Rambam explains the first case of Masechta, not that somebody says, do you know Gemara Ksubas, and you answer no when you really do, but that somebody says to you, what are you learning? And you don't want to answer, I'm learning Ksubas, in case you'll start asking you questions. So you say, I'm learning Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. So if he asks you questions, you'll know the answers. That's what Masechta means. Says the Drisha, and listen to this carefully, because it's rather disturbing what the Drisha says. Says the Drisha, according to the Rambam, why are you allowed to tell a lie when somebody asks you if you're learning Masechta Ksubas? Because you don't want to be embarrassed by having to answer questions you don't know. So what we see here is another principle, says the Drisha, unlike Rashi and Tosfos, that where you're telling a lie which doesn't cause anybody any harm, it's just a lie, a little white lie that doesn't, nobody suffers from it, you're permitted to do so just for your own convenience. You aren't permitted to do so if nobody has any convenience out of it. But if you have a bit of convenience in it, if it helps you out of a difficult spot, you're allowed to tell a lie. So he asks you whether you know Ksubas, or he asks you what you're learning, you tell him something else that you know well, so that you shouldn't be embarrassed by having to answer a question that you, by being expected to answer a question that you don't know the answer to. That's how the Drisha learns. So he says you've got the Rif and the Rambam on the one hand, who say you may tell a lie in these three cases. Why may you tell a lie? Because otherwise you'll be embarrassed, for one of the reasons that we've discussed over here. But you don't have to tell a lie. If you're prepared to face the embarrassment, you don't have to tell a lie. But in the case of Sholem, you have to tell a lie. And we have Rashi and Tosfos who hold it here, you also have to tell a lie, and it's all part of the same group. Says the Drisha, why is this part of the same group? What's this got to do with Sholem? I understand maybe in the case of the host, that it's in the interest of Sholem that you don't publicize what a good host he is. But if somebody asks you whether you know him, the Masechta Ksubas, and you say, no, I don't, what's that got to do with peace? answers the Drisha another very strange thing. The first strange thing that the Drisha said is that according to the Rambam and the Rif, for your own convenience, you're allowed to tell a lie if it doesn't cause anybody any harm. The second thing, says the Drisha, is that according to Rashi and Tosfos, since Drachei Darchei Noam v'chol nesivosei hasholem, the ways of the Torah are ways of pleasantness and all her paths lead to peace, anything you do for Torah is something that you're doing for peace. Therefore, if you're telling a lie for a mitzvah or for a good middah, it's okay if it doesn't cause anybody any harm. In other words, again, provided it doesn't cause anybody any harm, he's basically saying ends justify the means. If you're telling a lie that doesn't hurt anybody, but you're telling it for a good reason, no matter what the reason is, as long as it's a mitzvah, you must do it, says the Drisha. According to the Rambam and the Rif, not only if it's for a mitzvah must you do it, but even if it's for your own convenience, you may do it. It comes out quite an interesting line as far as the flexibility of emes is concerned according to the Drisha. Rabbi Isaac Sher brings this Drisha. Rabbi Isaac Sher is the father-in-law of Rabbi Tukachinsky. Remember Rabbi Tukachinsky, who comes once every 2 years? Not the one who was here a few weeks ago, but the one that comes was here about a year ago. His father-in-law was Rabbi Isaac Sher, who was the Rosh Yeshiva and the Mashgiach in Slabodka Yeshiva, and he brings this Drisha and he takes it l'halocha. He actually builds on it and bases on it, and he brings various proofs for it. One of them is from the Mesillas Yesharim, where the Mesillas Yesharim says a Talmid Chochem is allowed to tell a lie in these three instances, and he deduces from that that a Talmid Chochem is allowed to tell a lie only in these three cases. But a person who is not a Talmid Chochem, a person who is an ordinary Jew, is allowed to tell a lie even in other cases where he has some benefit out of it, where it's convenient, provided it doesn't cause anybody else any harm. And that's how he concludes. As I learned through this Drisha, I was encountering incredible problems. On the one hand, it doesn't sound right. We talked on Shavuos night about a thing has to sound right. And if it doesn't sound right, either it's because your feeling is wrong or because the thing is wrong. To say that the Drisha is wrong is not shaykh, it's not possible. But still it didn't feel right, that one can tell a lie for convenience. That there's a difference between a Talmid Chochem and not a Talmid Chochem. Talmid Chochem, even for convenience, doesn't tell a lie. And Amoritz, for convenience, can. After all, this Gemara is talking about Talmidei Chachomim as well. Furthermore, that for a mitzvah one can tell a lie according to Rashi and Tosfos. Provided it's for a mitzvah, you can tell a lie. This doesn't sound right. It doesn't sound correct. And furthermore, what's the reason for which you can tell a lie for a mitzvah, according to the Drisha? We have a principle that we know there's conflict between Shalom and Emes. Okay. We're given an axiom. There's conflict between Shalom and Emes, and Shalom rules. And we understand that axiom, because Shalom is the name of the Ribbono Shel Olam, and Emes is only his signature. Emes is only his office. Therefore, Shalom comes first. Where there is a contradiction and you can't solve the contradiction, peace comes before truth. That's a principle we're given in Masechta Yevamos Daf Samachay, and we understand it. One understands that you can't be Mechalel Shabbos just to do some kind of a mitzvah. You want to do something nice, go and be Mechalel Shabbos, you're not allowed to. To save somebody's life, you're allowed to be Mechalel Shabbos. Why? Not just because life is more important than Shabbos. That's not the reason. Life isn't more important than Shabbos. But by saving somebody's life, in other words, you are being Mechalel Shabbos once, he's going to keep many more Shabbatot. That's the reasoning, that's the philosophy for being permitted to be Mechalel Shabbos to save somebody's life. So understand the logic. You're breaking Shabbos in the interests of Shabbos. I understand that. I understand that you're breaking Emes in the interests of Shalom. But why are you allowed to break Emes for any other mitzvah? If there's an issur, if there's a prohibition to tell a lie, why for a mitzvah are you allowed to tell a lie? There are many prohibitions which you're not allowed to do for a mitzvah. You're not allowed to steal. You can't steal for a mitzvah either. Why not? What's the difference? Why can't you steal for a mitzvah, but you can tell a lie for a mitzvah? Okay, stealing causes somebody else damage as well. But they're both issurim, they're both prohibited. In other words, I'm just trying to understand the logic. What's the connection between being allowed to tell a lie and the mitzvah for which one's telling the lie? And I found myself in a very difficult position, because I couldn't argue with the drisha, because he says it quite clearly, and it appears correct when you go through Rashi and Tosfos and the Rambam and the Rif. It appears correct to pray to the Ribbono Shel Olam that he should show me where the drisha is wrong. I knew I didn't have a chance to pray to the Ribbono Shel Olam that I should find the drisha right. I decided to leave that as a last resort. If I couldn't find anything else, then I would pray to the Ribbono Shel Olam to understand the drisha, but I would be happier finding that the drisha is in. So I thought there was a possibility. There was only one chance that I would have to solve the conflict between the drisha and I this afternoon, and that was to try and find a rishon which the drisha never saw. I was quite sure that if I went looking anywhere where the drisha saw, he understood it better than I did. He looked at the Gemaras, I looked at the Gemaras, I've got no chance. He looked at the Rashi, I looked at the Rashi, I've got no chance. He looked at Tosfos, I looked at Tosfos, I've got no chance. My only chance would be if I could find a rishon whom I know for sure that rishon never saw. And I found one. I decided there's only one rishon that I have in my study that the rishon never saw, and that was the Meiri, because the Meiri was only discovered recently. So I opened up the Meiri, you can imagine with what kind of expectation. Thanks. And look what I find. I'm going to read the whole Meiri to you word for word. How do you define a Talmid Chochem to whom one is permitted to return lost property without requiring from him identification? Answers the Meiri, which is incredible. Ze shehu im chochmosoi bal midas. Somebody who, in addition to being wise, is also a refined human being. That's the definition of a Talmid Chacham. Incredible. We have here in the Meiri something which a lot of people debate about and discuss. What is a Talmid Chacham? Talmid Chacham is a man who has Chochmah and Midas, who is clever, wise, knowledgeable, and refined. Then he's a Talmid Chacham. You cannot have a Talmid Chacham who has no Midas, then by definition he's not a Talmid Chacham. The Siman Muvhak B'Midas Talmid Chacham. And the sign, the unquestionable sign, the Meiri is careful with his words, the siman muvhak, the absolute sign for midas in the Talmid Chacham. How do you get tested? Well, here you've got his watch, and you want to know whether you can give it to him or not. So you can't go around watching to see how he deals with people and so on. So what's the sign to look for? Kol she'eno meshane b'dibura. You just have to ask around by his friends. Does he ever tell a lie? That's the midah to watch. Because that's a sign for all the other midahs. We're going to explain this by the time we finish tonight. And maybe get another tape ready. I think we're going to go just over the hour. By the time we're finished, we'll explain why this is such an unquestioned midah, why it's such an unquestioned test for midahs. If he never tells a lie, you know that he's a bal midahs. You know that he's okay in all the other midahs. You know that he's kind. You know that he's gracious. You know that he's merciful, you know that he's sensitive, as long as he never tells a lie. The yesh dvorim sheshinu dvorim eino pergamto. And there are some things where if he tells a lie, that doesn't disqualify him. Alright, so let's see it step by step. What is a Talmid Chacham? He must have midos plus chochmah. He must have wisdom plus character. How do you test for character? He must never tell a lie. But there's some things, if you hear he tells a lie in the following things, that doesn't matter. Umehem kol shiyesh b'shinoi sarach le'ezo midah. If his lie is in the interests of a particular midah, if he told a lie because it was the refined thing to do to tell that lie, then the fact that he told a lie is not against his midahs. So number one, we see that the Meiri is learning already like Rashi and Tosfos. Okay? This has got nothing to do with convenience. We're talking about a man who's telling a lie for refinement, not because he's embarrassed. And that solves our first problem with the drisha, except that the Meiri might be going like Rashi and Tosfos. We don't yet know. Let's see. V'hu she'omre b'masechta b'furio v'shpiza. And that's what the Gemara says in Avodah Zarah, in Bava Metzia, in his learning, in intimate matters, and about hospitality. The inyonam. And the principle is, I'll explain it to you, says the Meiri. שאם שאלוהו באיזה מסכת הוא עוסק ויודע בעצמו שאינו בחיבה. If somebody asks him, what are you learning? And he knows that he doesn't know what he's learning terribly well. ומסיירי שמה יקיפו שאלו יש בעניונה, and he's worried that they'll start attacking him with questions in that מסכת. אומר להם שהוא עוסק במסכת אחרת שהוא בחיבה ויוסק. He can tell him he's busy learning something else which he knows better. Is that like the Rambam or like Rashi? It's like the Rambam. So we see that he's learning like the Rambam and the Rif, but it's all midrash, it's not convenience. But Nebuch the Drisha never saw the Meiri. This is something very precious that only came to us recently. And so if they ask him intimate matters, Noheg b'tshuvoso yedvorim she'enan atzadat sneus, and in his answer he would have to say things which are not modest, and he doesn't have to worry about it. If they ask him about his host, he can tell a lie about his praise. Whether he's going to reduce the praise that he talks about his host or not mention any praise at all, whatever he wants, it's up to him. In case coarse people will get to hear about it and go and take advantage of the balabos. Or to tell the shpizah, to tell the host that he likes something that he doesn't like. The guest sees that the host has prepared chicken and rice, and he hates chicken and he hates rice. And the host says, do you like chicken and rice? He says, yes, it's my favorite. Absolutely in order. Not only in order, it's the correct thing to do. And you force it down your throat. Shelo la'atriya chalav. Otherwise, you make the balabos very upset. And if he's a proper balabos, as soon as he realizes that you don't like chicken and rice, he'll go and make you something else. And that you don't want to happen. So you force it down. V'chein mitbar b'maseches yevomis. And so also, adds the Meiri, we learn in Maseches Yevomos that it's the way of Talmidei Chachomim to tell lies in order to bring about peace. And they add words and they detract words to introduce love between two people. And any such example, lying is not a disadvantage. Lying doesn't mean that the man is not a fine man. And not only that, this, for example, the case of bringing peace, he's got to in fact tell a lie. So now we have something here between Rashi and the Rambam. We have the Meiri, who learns, on the one hand, that the reason for telling a lie in the three cases given in Bava Metzia is the same as Rashi. It's for midas, it's because it's the refined thing to do. In addition to that, not only are you allowed to tell a lie in the case of Sholem, but you have to tell a lie in the case of Sholem. So it appears as if there's no machlokes here at all. Except that the Rif holds that in the cases of Bava Metzia, you may tell a lie for your midos. And it appears that Rashi and Tosfos hold that you've got to tell a lie because they classify it together with Sholem. So we see from here that the Meiri is explaining the shita of the Rambam and the Rif, unlike the way the Drisha explains it. And the way he comes out, our two difficulties on the Drisha are removed. Number one, nobody says you can tell a lie for your own convenience. That's not allowed, even if it doesn't harm anybody, according to no shita. Number two, we're going to answer the whole explanation of why you can tell a lie for midos. First, let's just understand what the midos are. So starting from the back, telling about your shpiza, telling about your host, that's derech eretz. When somebody asks you something intimate, that's tznius. I understand Rashi who says that mesechta means if somebody says, do you know the whole mesechta? And you say, no, I don't. That's anova, that's modesty. But if somebody says, what are you learning? And you tell them a lie, you say, I'm learning kitzur shulchan aruch, when you're really learning gemara ksuvos. Why are you allowed to do that? What's the middah? The middah is busha. One's embarrassed, and embarrassment is a positive middle. It's good to be embarrassed by not knowing something you're expected to know. But it's not for your own convenience. It's because we know that busho is something correct. Busho is something one should feel. If you feel an embarrassment at your ignorance, that's positive. There's nothing wrong with feeling embarrassed about being ignorant. And taking steps to express that embarrassment is in fact very fine. Means when afterwards you'll say, why are you telling me a lie? I saw you learning Suddhas yesterday. You say, it's because I don't understand it and I'm embarrassed. That's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. Now we've still got to explain why you're allowed to. Tosfos follows Rashi, which means he follows the Meiri, which means he follows the Rambam and the Rif. Everybody now agrees that the three cases we've dealt with, telling a lie about your knowledge, telling a lie about intimate details, and telling a lie about your host, are all permitted because they are midos, because they are, it's the refined thing to do, to tell the lie. However, Tosfos says that they all fit into the subcategory of Sholeh. And that will explain that will answer our question of what is the justification? Why, just because it's a midah, are you allowed to tell a lie? And there's an issue to tell a lie. You're not allowed to tell a lie. Midvah sheker tirchak. You must make yourself far from anything that's not honest. And here we're told for midas you're allowed to. So Tosfos obviously is trying to fit them into the one category that we do understand. We understand why you're permitted to deviate from emes for sholem. And Tosfos says this is also sholem. And we have to understand what is the connection between midos and sholem. And really the answer is very simple. Imagine somebody comes into the Beis HaMedrash really not dressed the way a person should come into the Beis HaMedrash. And it's somebody who doesn't even know that that's the case. Let's say if it's somebody that should know better, then I'm perfectly justified in doing what I would do, which is stop the shir in the middle and say, oh, where do you come from? Where have you just been? If you've just come from the beach, then maybe you should go home and get dressed first. But somebody who should know better, even though they're being embarrassed in public. But if it's not somebody who should know better, somebody's just come in for the first time, doesn't know how one should dress, looks around to see how others are dressed, and probably feels embarrassed in any case. And imagine I do that. Stop the shir and pick on them and start screaming at them. It's MS. What I say is true. There's no question about it. That's not the way to come dressed to a Beis HaMedrash. That's not the way to come dressed to a shul. It's correct. It's MS. But it's no good for shalom. It's not encouraging peaceful relationships between people. But let's say after the shir I go to that person and I knock on their door and I'm let in, I take a seat, and then the person comes into the room and I stand up when they come in, say good evening, I say please sit down, I sit down and I speak respectfully and I show them kovod and I say, you know, something I want to tell you. That wasn't the way to come dressed to shul. And I shout and scream the same way. That doesn't interfere with shul. That's also correct. I'm doing the same thing. What's the difference? I'm doing it with midos. One can carry off being honest if you've got the midos to do it. Nobody will take offense. One can be sharp. One can be critical. One can be destructively critical. I mean in a constructive way. One can embarrass a person with one's criticism. As long as he knows you're a baal midos. And you wouldn't do it if there wasn't a reason. Because you don't normally go around embarrassing people. Then you'll understand. If this man, such a tzaddik, found it necessary to go against his nature is not to embarrass people, and he found it necessary to embarrass me in front of everybody, there's obviously something wrong, I better find out what's going on. As long as one has the midas, one can carry off straightness, one can call a spade, without causing a damage to sholem, without causing damage to peace. In other words, the only way of overcoming the conflict between peace and truth is by being a mensch. In fact, by following, by imitating God. God is the one who's able to combine the two. He's the only one who's really able to combine sholom and emes. What do we have to do? We have to imitate God. V'halachta bidrochov. What does the Gemara say v'halachta bidrochov means? Emulating God. Mahu rachum afata rachum. The same way as God is merciful, you be merciful. Mahu tzaddik, afatat tzaddik, the way he's righteous, you be righteous. That's what emulating God means. It doesn't say mahu shalom, afatat shalom. You don't have to worry about that. It doesn't say mahu emet, afatat emet. In the same way as his truth, you must be truthful. If you've got the midos, If you're a fine human being, if you've got the chesed, if you've got the sensitivity, if you've got the ability to note how another person feels and to respond to it, you'll be able to handle the emes and shalom easily. I'm going to explain that further in a moment, but meanwhile, let's go back now to Rashi and Tosfos. Now we understand how Rashi operates. You're allowed to tell a lie if it's to develop your midos, because developing your midos is in the long-term interests of peace. And peace comes before emes. If you develop your midos, if you develop your personality and your character, you will in the long term be able to keep to emes and shalom. You won't have to tell a lie for shalom. A man without midos will find that he's often having to tell lies in order to keep the peace. Because if he's straight, people will be resentful about it. Whereas a man who's working on his midos, who's becoming a refined human being, will one day reach a stage that he won't have to tell so many lies to keep the shalom, to keep the peace. So he's telling the little lies now are in the interests of long-term truthfulness. He's learning how to be truthful in the long term. So in the same way as you're allowed to be mechallel Shabbos to keep many more Shabbosim, you're allowed to be mechallel Shabbos to save one Jew, because by saving that Jew he's going to keep lots of other Shabbosim. So you're allowed to tell a lie in the interests of character development, if that character development ultimately is going to ensure that you'd have to tell fewer lies, even in the interests of truth. That's what Rashi and Tosfos are telling us. Yes, it's for midos, but not just any midos. It's where the development of the midos is going to serve the interests of truthfulness ultimately. And that's why Tosfos says, this is all part of the Gemara and Yevamos. The Gemara and the Yevamos lays down the principle. The principle is you're allowed to tell a lie for shalom, and only for shalom. Here we have subcategories. Even to develop the ability to tell the truth, ultimately that's also called in the interests of shalom, and therefore to develop refinement you're allowed to do it. So a human being who's asked a question, the answer to which would be unrefined, tells a lie, because he's working on his refinement. If it will be arrogance to answer the question, there's nothing wrong in answering the question, but for his development of his midos, it will be an act of arrogance, he's not allowed to do it. If it will be a denial of derech eretz, of simple decency, he's not allowed to do it, because he's busy working on himself to make himself a finer human being, to make himself more and more of a mensch, because he knows that when he's really a mensch, he'll never have to tell a lie, even in the interest of peace. Then he won't have to be a diplomat. You only have to be a diplomat when you're not a mensch. That's when you have to be diplomatic. You have to be careful what you say, because if you say the wrong thing, people are going to get upset. But if you are a mensch, even if you say the wrong thing, people will know there was a reason for it. Nobody will suspect you of being unfair and unpleasant. There's a Gemara in Sanhedrin, that's Tzadi Zayin, 97a. The Gemara talks about a gentleman who said, I never believed it was possible to be 100% honest. Well, that fits in with what we've said, it's almost impossible. He said, until I met so-and-so who told me that even if you'll give me all the money in the world, I won't tell the slightest lie. Okay? So then he came to a particular town, and he found two interesting things. Number one, they never told lies there, which implies they never told lies even in the interests of peace. Number two, nobody died before their time. So I thought to myself, said this man, that that's the place to find for myself a wife. And I married one of the women from this town, and I had 12 wonderful children by her. One day, somebody came to the door while my wife was having a bath, says this man, and asked me if my wife was in. I felt it wouldn't be right to tell the truth and say, yes, but she's having a bath. It's not smears. It's none of their business what she's doing. So I answered, no, she isn't in. Let's stop there for a moment. Mutter or osur? Is that allowed or isn't it allowed? Mutter. Smears. And after that, I lost my 12 children and my wife. There's only one way we can understand this. Not mutter. Osur. Why? Why are you allowed to tell a lie for tzniyus? If that's ultimately going to lead you to being more honest, you're busy developing your menschlichkeit. But they're already beyond this. They're already honest. They don't need this anymore. They've reached the point where nobody takes offense at being told the truth. They've reached the point where no matter what, they're never going to tell a lie. This is already a town that nobody's told a lie for generations. You don't need to tell a lie for tzniyus. You're not permitted to tell a lie for tzniyus. You're only permitted to tell a lie in the interests of truth ultimately, that here it was unnecessary. In this particular case, it was unnecessary, and therefore he suffered the consequences. This now explains the Me'iri. The first words of the Me'iri, which are astounding in their forthrightness. The Me'iri says, I'm just going to read those first words to you again. Ezehu Talmid Chacham Shenachzi Le'aveda B'tvius Eina B'loi Simen. What is the definition of a Talmid Chacham to whom we may return lost property just by his seeing it, identifying it without asking him to give any signs? Ze Shehu, this is a person who Im Chachmasoi Baal Midas, who together with his wisdom is a Baal Midas, is a refined human being as well. That's all okay. The siman muvhak b'midos talmid chacham kol she'enu meshane b'dibura. And the sign of a baal midos, of somebody who's a refined human being, honesty. Why honesty? Let's say the way he treats his wife, the way he treats poor people. Why honesty? Why is that the thing to look at? Very simple. If he's a talmid chacham, we know one thing. He's not a Baal Machlokes. I mean, if he's a person who wherever he goes there's Machlokes, then clearly he doesn't fit into the category. So he's not a person who rubs people up the wrong way. We're examining, is he a Talmid Chacham or not? So he's clearly not obviously not a Talmid Chacham. A man who's always rubbing people up the wrong way is not a Talmid Chacham. If he's always telling the truth, you know he's a Baal Midas. Because if he's not a Baal Midas, he won't be able to keep peace and always be truthful. People will get resentful. So if you know that he has a good name among people, and in other words, he gets on well with people, he doesn't cause anybody any terrible hardships, and in addition to that, you know that he's honest, that he never tells a lie, then you know he's a Baal Midas. Because society will not tolerate an honest man who is not a Baal Midas. An honest man is not a Baal Midas, rubs society up the wrong way, and quite rightly so, because he's insensitive. So yes, you can call a spade, if you're a Baal Midas. And if you're not, you don't call a spade. So we have two types of people. We have three types of people. You have a man who keeps the peace and is not a Baal Midas. He must keep the peace by being dishonest. A man who gets on well with everybody, and everybody's only got a nice thing to say about him, and no machlokes, he's being dishonest, unless he's a Baal Midas. If he's a refined human being, if he's a tzaddik, if he's a gentleman in everything he does, if he treats his wife like a mensch, which Reb Chaim Vital says is the most important element of Midas. Don't worry about how he treats other people. Just check out how he treats his wife. That's what. How he treats other people, that's for making the right appearances. If you want to see his stature, if you want to see how frum he is, don't worry about how many pairs of tefillin he puts on and how long his tzitzis are and what color hat he wears. That's not what's important. If you want to know how frum he is, check how he treats his wife. That's where you'll see it. And if this man who gets on well with everybody else also gets on well with his wife, then you know that he must be a person who tells the truth as well. But if he's a person that gets on well with the whole world, everybody's only got good to say about him, and you listen at his door and you hear the tzitzis, you hear the weeping wife, you hear the problems, and you hear the way he speaks to her, and you hear the way he treats her, and you hear what kind of allowance he keeps her on, and you hear how when the last time was that he bought her a present, then you must know this is not a man to be trusted. This is a dishonest, sly individual, and he's not to be trusted. He's not a Baal Midas at all. He's not a Baal Midas, and more important, he can't be honest. Because the only way that he could have kept up that pretense in society is by telling everybody what they like to hear. That's all. His wife he doesn't have to worry about, because she's caught. She's committed. And the rest of society, the only way he can keep them married to him is by telling them what they like to hear. So that's not allowed. You must know that he's a dishonest human being. Then you have another human being who's honest. You can always hear the truth from him, but he rubs everybody up the wrong way. That's also another Talmid Chacham. He's honest, straightforward, calls a spade, rubs up everybody up the wrong way. He's not a Baal Midas. What one has to find is a human being who doesn't rub people up the wrong way. That doesn't mean that there aren't people who don't like him. There's nothing wrong with having a few people that don't like one. But generally, one's an accepted person. Generally, one isn't abrasive. One doesn't cause machlokes as soon as one walks into a room. that abrasiveness there mustn't be. And in addition to that honesty, then you know he's a Baal Midas. And I've actually seen a case where a group of Talmidei Chachomim were sitting around, and somebody said something that was probably wrong, possibly wrong. Certainly one of the people there thought he was wrong. And one of the people climbed down his throat, and there was an immediate division, those for and those against. I saw another very similar occasion where there were also Talmidei Chachomim around the table, and the same thing happened, and somebody said something that was possibly or probably wrong, and a tzaddik was present, literally a tzaddik, and he put his foot down with no less firmness than the first occasion that I'm talking about, no less firmness. And after he'd finished, the conversation continued, no sides taken, nothing, just everything continued as it was. There you have an ability of a man to be firm, tell the truth as it is, without offending anybody. How? It's not just how you put it over. That's not good enough. It's what kind of man you are. You've got to be known as a tzaddik. You've got to be known as a refined human being to be able to get away with telling the truth like it really is. Then one can tell the truth like it really is without antagonizing shalom. But if one isn't such a tzaddik, if one isn't such a refined human being, and one tells the truth as it really is, and one antagonizes shalom, that's not allowed. And lastly, I want to look at one consequence out of all this. Today, the pressure on man in society is shalom. It's not emes. The society in which we live is a diplomatic society. We like getting on with people. We like politeness. Particularly, I'm talking about our specific society. Politeness, sociability, amiability, getting on with people. Emes, that's not so important. The emphasis on our moral values is not one of emeskite. It's one of being a good sportsman, a good team player. That's how we're trained from childhood, to be able to get on with people. Being able to get on with people is a very important value. But the pressure on us is to conform. To conform to our society. If one is not a Baal Midas, if one is not refined, one must become dishonest under this pressure. And that's the danger one has to understand. People always ask, what is the connection between Midas and learning? Why does one have to be a Baal Midas in order to be able to learn? That's it. Why are those two things so inseparable? The answer is, if one isn't a Baal Midas, one's learning cannot be straight. Because the pressure in one's learning, in one's thinking, in one's communication, is to say what other people will like to hear. And unless you are able to carry off calling a spade, you must know that the consequences are that you're going to distort your thinking to reach conclusions with which your society approves. Whether it's general Western society, or whether it's a frum Torah society, or whether it's one's immediate friends, very often you see a person sitting in a shir and he asks a question which is a rotten question. Why does he ask it? To impress. Or because he knows that other people are bothered by that question. It's not really his question. He's not bothered by it. But he knows that other people are, so he comes forward with it to get the approval. Or he'll give an answer which is not a good answer, but it's the kind of answer people like to hear. That's not in order. The thing that we have to be terribly careful of is the emphasis in all spheres of life. I'm not only talking about learning Torah, in one's business life, in one's professional life, in one's family life. There's tremendous pressure to be accepted. To be one of the crowd, whether that crowd is a small little crowd that one's designed for oneself, one's own immediate family, it's a tremendous need. The psychologists talk of the American man, and when they talk about the American man, it's the whole of the West. The American man's need to be loved, which is a new invention. American man or man didn't used to need to be loved, he used to need to love. That was different. Now man needs to be loved. And most marriages break down when the man isn't getting enough love. A man isn't meant to get love. He's not a baby. A man is a lover, not a beloved. His wife is the beloved. And his children he gives love to. But he is not there to be loved. He is there to love. And this need to be loved is all part of the shalom. Peace, love. These are words. Liberty, freedom. All these words that are showered upon us since infancy are all words which stress the importance of being accepted, of being liked, of being popular. The whole democratic system
Who's a good man? The most popular man. Who do you vote in? Who do you choose as your president? The one that can inspire the most votes. It's really irrelevant. What do they know about his ability to lead the country? Nobody knows that. Doesn't have to pass any exam. Before they let you be a doctor, you've got to pass an exam which is marked by specialists. Before they let you be a lawyer or drive a motor car, you've got to be passed by somebody who knows more about driving motor cars than you do. But if you want to become the president of the United States, all you need is to be liked. That's all, and the masses can judge. People who don't even know what it means, who've never seen the White House, certainly never been inside it, people who've never read a newspaper in their life, they decide whether you're suitable to be president or not. The whole mentality is one of tremendous value being placed on being accepted and popular, rather than on being MS. Now that's alright, being popular, there's nothing wrong, one has to be loved. Or by loved I mean one has to be accepted by the Brias. Humanity must accept a human being. If they don't, there's something wrong. That pressure on a human being is going to force him to be dishonest. Because the only way you can keep the love of the others, whether it's the love of your wife, or the love of your husband, or the love of your children, or the love of your parents, or the love of your boss, or the love of your colleagues, or the love of your juniors, the only way you can do it, if you're not a great human being, is by giving them what they want. Telling them what they like to hear. And if that means telling something to A and telling the opposite to B, if you need A and B both to love you, you're going to tell one thing to A and something else to B. Ultimately, there's going to be a pressure to do that. It's going to be a hard pressure to resist, because one can't afford in this society to be unpopular. The only way around that is to become a great match. Because only when you're sufficiently secure in yourself that you know that when I tell A something that he doesn't like to hear, because it's true, he'll know it's not because I'm being nasty. He'll know it's not because I have an axe to grind. He'll know it's because it's the truth, and I've thought it out, and it's unquestionable. It's correct. And he'll know that I don't like doing that kind of thing. He'll know it because he'll see the way I treat other people. And he'll see the way I've always treated him and the way I always will treat him. And therefore I can have the courage to be honest. Intellectual integrity in an environment of popularity such as ours can only survive if the intellects are also great people, if the intellects are also refined people. It must be that way, otherwise we can't exist. And that really, these last couple of words, is the main emphasis of the shiur this evening. The shalom, which is important, that's the essence of the Ribbono Shalom. There's emes, which is very important too. It's the chosen, it's the signature of the Ribbono Shalom. Emes and shalom cause conflicts in most people. It doesn't cause conflict in the Ribbono Shalom, and it didn't cause conflict in that particular town that we learnt about in Sanhedrin. But in ordinary people it causes conflict, because when you're straight, you're going to offend somebody. There's no way that you can be honest all the time without offending people, because straightness is going to mean saying things which are not the accepted norms. It's going to mean saying things which are not always popular, and it's going to mean telling individuals things that they don't always like to hear. That's part of being honest, that's part of being straight. And one isn't permitted to do that if it's going to lead to a breakdown in shalom, if it's going to lead to a breakdown in peace. The only way those two can be overcome, and particularly in our environment where peace is unquestioned, peace there must be, and it's good that there is such an environment, as long as we can counteract that by reinforcing our characters to the point where we're quite confident of being able to carry off being honest and straight without feeling threatened in terms of our popularity. That's a value we need in our day-to-day life. That's a value we need in the learning of our Torah. And it's something which we're certainly going to emphasize in our own learning, that people have to understand that if you're involved in the learning of the Gemara, if you're busy learning Ksubis, that means you're committed also to becoming a mensch. There's no way that you can sit and learn Ksubis as an intellectual exercise or learn anything. Be involved in the study of truth, be involved in the study of emes. There's no way that you're permitted to be involved unless you're a mensch. In fact, the Rambam paskens that one is not permitted to teach Torah to an Adam she'eino hagun. One is not permitted to teach Torah to a person who's not a mensch. And that's the reason. Because if you're going to teach Torah to a person who's not a mensch, in his desire to be accepted despite the fact that he's not a mensch, he's going to distort the truth and he's going to twist it. That's something that we should all guard against, and we should all be saved from, to ensure that we're able to fulfill the Ribbono Shel'olam's original expectations of us, to emulate his essence and to respect his stamp, his signature of emes.